C4. Number 18A.
We come to the chapter Footsteps of Truth. Let's go out always from the preceding chapter on physiology. What has it shown? It has shown to us that the way of thinking on the basis of the human mind and mortal mind doesn't lead anywhere, that this brings only a creation that falls back into itself and disappears. The second part showed, therefore, that we should culture our thought into the divine light, that we should awake in thy likeness, and gave us those human qualities that are helpful in order to awake, finally at the end of the chapter, physiology, to the point where I see myself as idea. Now, this awakening to the divine facts is only a transitionary stage, an improved stage. That's why we have, as a point of intersection for this chapter, Christ as Christianity, and Christianity always gives an improved state, an improvement. And so we improve through those qualities. But finally, something in us says, but what then is a divine consciousness? So at the end of physiology, we just touched the possibility that we are at the point of a divine consciousness, and that only divine consciousness really is that which determines how much of a man we are, that it gives us the concept that man is the idea. And so the chapter on Footsteps of Truth takes up this question and says, now, how can we now fill our consciousness with the full truth, not with the transitional qualities, but with the truth itself? How do we have a divine consciousness and not just an improved human consciousness? And Mrs. Eddy gives there the introduction and says, you know, actually, in order to have a divine consciousness, you just have to see that you first empty your human consciousness of everything that is there, because a vessel already full cannot be filled anymore. You just spill it all over the place. So it is better that you first debunk, so to say, mortal consciousness, an unscientific consciousness, and then see that you start out in filling your consciousness with the divine facts. She tells here that we should not graft holiness upon unholiness, that we cannot fill vessels already full, they must first be emptied, let us disrobe error. And I think this is a very good indication of how to teach, if we want to teach the students a new consciousness, that we do what Joel has done last week, that she started out first by emptying consciousness from the wrong concept, from a mortal consciousness, and show that that mortal consciousness is nothing, that it is not reliable, that we can leave that behind. And only when one has seen the emptiness of a mortal consciousness, then you can fill in again and can fill it with the divine consciousness. This is what the chapter on Footsteps of Truth does. It fills consciousness with those divine facts. How can we fill consciousness so that it is a scientific consciousness and not just a better human consciousness? Through the first part of that chapter, she shows that consciousness should be filled by bringing it into accord with God. That if we begin to fill consciousness with that, what constitutes really the divine consciousness, the divine system of reference, that then man will have no more a human consciousness, but that the man has the mind of Christ. Therefore, that first part gives us the divine footsteps showing how to fill our thought with the seven synonymous terms, so that we have the same consciousness as the seven synonymous terms, showing thereby that divinity has a human bridge, so to say, that the humanity is built that way, that we can take in the divinity, that though we are on a human level, we can fill our consciousness with the divine, that the human does not prevent us from filling consciousness with the divine, and step by step the mortal consciousness disappears out of the human consciousness, and what is left over is a divine consciousness. So in that first part, which is a much more absolute part, she depicts really how to fill consciousness with the divine consciousness, and then shows in the second part that if we fill our thought with the divine consciousness, that also has its impact on the human consciousness, that then in the human we will go around with a consciousness that is much more geared to the divine, and in this way shows really the divinity of humanity, that the human is serving the divine. We'll see that very easily when we compare those two parts with each other and see the great difference in tonality. The first part, much stronger, much more absolute, the divine consciousness. The second part, the humanity of it, that divine consciousness can even be used in the human and therefore give us a more scientific approach in the human to the divine. Let's take the epitomes that you have written out, put them before you, and we want to see if we find that specific tonality which is adapted to this point of intersection of Christ as science, namely scientific consciousness. The first subject, mind, shows that a scientific consciousness should rest on scientific knowledge. You have mind, knowledge. And what she postulates here is that we should know the science of mind. That we should know the science of mind. Therefore, any investigation into the science of mind is filling our mind with the divine mind, so that we have the mind of Christ. She stipulates here true study. Study the letter. Therefore, study the divine mind. Study the system of reference in order to get the spirit. Get the clear comprehension, she would say here, of that science of mind. So, can you see what we do? We fill consciousness with knowledge, the knowledge of mind. We didn't have that before, that knowledge of mind. What does she say that is the counterfeit of it? What constitutes the unscientific consciousness? Namely, that we rest and build on human opinions. She gives here a whole list of counterfeits of mind, showing that we should not build on belief, on faith, on opinions, of imagining, of human notions and thoughts, on befogged thinking, on mistaken reasoning. Can you see, each one of them is a counterfeit of mind. You really learn your counterfeits by going through these subjects, you see. Did you hear it? They are all counterfeits of mind, showing that human consciousness, non-scientific consciousness, is always that consciousness which just rests on human opinions. What people have said, that's true. What one has heard, what one has read in the paper, that's true. That's building up one's wrong consciousness. mistaken reasoning, befogged thinking, all that indefiniteness of thinking, all that is a wrong basis for structuring our consciousness. In spirit, she says that the scientific consciousness should rest on spirit understanding, spiritual facts. On understanding spiritual facts. It is a very strong exposition here of understanding the reality of spirit. And in order to understand the reality of spirit, we have to know the calculus of spirit. She speaks a lot about the calculus of spirit. And she speaks about the tongue of spirit, the spiritual language. You see how here now completely different tonality comes in mind. It says, know God, know the signs of mind, know it. Whereas in spirit, it's just another aspect of culturing our consciousness and says, understand spiritual reality. Concentrate on spiritual reality. Begin to calculate in spiritual facts, the calculus of spirit. Begin to reckon in with spiritual facts. Listen and learn the language of spirit, the spirit that follows the letter of mind. So in mind it says study the letter. In spirit it is the tonality of spirit, the letter combined with the spirit. That is possible if first we have emptied our vessels, our consciousness of what? Namely, the account of it is, don't rest on belief in matter and evil. And she speaks a lot about this belief in matter. She speaks about evil beliefs, evil mind, evil spirits, material laws, material conceptions, belief in opposites. Can you hear all counterfeits of spirit? Do you see how you learn your tonality, your ideas and your opposites and your counterfeits very easily? Just by going through these subjects. They give you an enormous rich sense here of what constitutes of unscientific consciousness and a scientific consciousness. In soul, what would we expect if we wouldn't know the text? What would we expect to hear here when we know that it has to show the form of the scientific understanding? What would we get in soul? Everybody would say, well, here she must present spiritual understanding or spiritual sense. And that's exactly what she does here. She says consciousness is only then scientific when it reckons according to spiritual sense, spiritual understanding, the immortal sense, the senses of soul. You see how clear these things are, And perhaps also you see how clear our tonality and our structured understanding becomes now slowly, because if I ask you now, therefore, what must she say that we have to, what we have to get rid of in soul, you would at once say, well, naturally you have to get rid of resting on the material senses and on the testimony of material senses, of mortal sense and corporeal sense, on the sensation. Exactly that's what he's saying. Do you realize what you are doing? Do you realize that we begin to have a structured concept of the synonymous term already? If I had said, what must she say here and you would have said, well, she must speak about the joy and happiness of soul and the freedom of soul. You would have said, it doesn't sound good, it hasn't tonality. What has happiness or joy of soul, satisfaction of joy to do with structuring one's understanding, how to understand scientifically? Did I put that right? Just here and there, nod your head, and then I know you are with me. Okay, that's it. All right. Okay. So, let's take principle. Well, we know now that what has to be brought out here is what constitutes a scientific understanding. In the positive, we have seen mind knowledge, spirit, the understanding of spiritual facts, soul, spiritual sense, what must come in principle. Actually, what must come in principle, you know exactly that it isn't harmony or system or demonstration or spiritual power. Huh? You know exactly that what must now come must be an understanding on the basis of a science, of with all the scientific aspects, scientific proof, scientific methods, scientific standpoints. That's what she's talking about here. Little by little you feel as if you could indicate how the textbook has to be written, anyway in the big tones. And the counterfeit of it would be, naturally, that we should not rest on theories, human theories, belief. She speaks about personal theories, misunderstanding the science, of being unwilling to correct our understanding. All has to do with principle. We go to life. What must life say when we are asking something about a scientific understanding, scientific consciousness? Well, life would not tell us something about exaltation, would not tell us something about multiplication. It would have to tell us something that has a scientific aspect, therefore method, for instance. And here she brings in that it must rest on spiritual method, and we have seen last week how important method becomes in a science. It all is a question of method. If we choose the right method, we get somewhere. If we don't choose the right method, the working out of a problem is very burdensome. Whereas in the negative, naturally, we see that we must empty our consciousness of the material methods. She speaks about those material methods in the way of using hygiene, of using dietetics, of fasting, food systems, and so on. All these things that are considered to be life methods, giving us more life and better life and longer life. Whereas the right method is really the method of life. Then, having compared this again, the scientific and the unscientific consciousness, here we find again the same thing that we have encountered so often, that after the fifth, those two don't run any more parallel. That in the sixth, we always have a sense that now the right is overcoming or destroying the wrong. Here it is showing that a scientific consciousness is freeing us. It's the liberator from a mortal consciousness. They go together again. It's no more showing really the scientific consciousness in truth as just something, and next to it the mortal consciousness. Now it shows that there is only one consciousness, and in order to show that there is only one consciousness, she has to show how the scientific consciousness is liberating us from the belief that there is an unscientific consciousness. The moment we come to truth, which is the only truth, error disappears. Therefore, we have that disappearing of mortal consciousness, or the liberation from a mortal consciousness. More or less saying what? You see, more or less saying, if we go through the first five stages, that is really our state of consciousness. And that state of consciousness, which is true, cannot have another one. Cannot have another one. And finally, in love, where we always get all or nothing, which we have seen before, she shows here that in a scientific consciousness, every sense of sin, sickness, and death just disappears. We do not have any more a sense that there could be, or even a suggestion that there could be, a false consciousness. Yes. This is the first part, and it shows how actually we can see, perhaps if one puts it right down to simplicity, that we could say here in footsteps of truth. She shows that we have to fill our consciousness with what? With mind, with the knowledge of mind, with spirit, with the calculus of spirit, with soul, with the spiritual sense of soul, with soul sense, with principle. With principle, namely with the science of being, with scientific methods. In life, with the method of life, the only method that lives. And if we do that, then our consciousness is a living consciousness, and that liberates us from a mortal consciousness, because mortality has been swallowed up in life at the fifth point, and so we feel the liberation from a mortal consciousness, and in love we feel, after all, because there is no mortal consciousness, we are not suffering under the effects of a mortal consciousness. We are absolutely out of it. So we encounter here always that law which is the liberator, which shows how to get out of duality. It is interesting, I want to investigate that clear, because it's only really in the last few years or so that I became aware of the various ways the seven run. Sometimes it's just one thing that runs through, a positive or a negative. But the moment you have positive and negative, it seems as if she would show a definite law. A definite law that you have to resolve the first five opposites. And when you see those opposites and see the positive of it, that always brings you to the true sense of resolving the opposite, so that in the seventh you have no more the suggestion of an opposite. Actually, it would be a terrific law showing how dualism in consciousness can be resolved without constantly having to fight one against the other, as in the first five subjects. Yes. All right. Oh, yes. Then let's go to part two. In part two, she would show that in the measure as we accept and take in into our consciousness the scientific constituents of consciousness, that naturally that would have its impact in the human, that we would also in the human that there would be a gradual improvement, a gradual change, not improvement, a gradual change in using scientific methods, in scientific consciousness in the human, when the human is investigated. See, the first part was just showing us the divine consciousness, there where we sit back and ponder the realities of being, ponder mind, and see that we have to know mind. But when it comes to the application in the human, where we have to teach or to educate, that then we have to use a translated sense of that scientific consciousness, a translated sense that is adapted to the human. We see that very clearly as we go through the second, and you see it in practical terms. That second part therefore gives us a much more relative sense than the first part. They may be the human footsteps that are necessary. And in those human footsteps, she shows that these human footsteps can only be taken gradually. You have a time concept coming in. It is not possible that we just jump into heaven with our consciousness, but that this is acquired step by step. She says, for instance, the human footsteps leading to perfection are indispensable. Can you see, the absolutist would not accept that statement. the absolutists in Christian Science, that whole lineage from Bicknell Young, De Lange, Margaret Laird, and so on, is all that absolutist sense who would never accept the statement that Mrs. Eddy makes like this, that the human footsteps are indispensable. They say there is no human footsteps, there is only the divine, the absolute, you have only a divine consciousness, and therefore there are no human footsteps, there are only divine footsteps. But Mrs. Eddy, in that whole second part, depicts all those human footsteps in consciousness that have to be taken. She speaks about the right education of human thought is necessary. The absolutists would not accept that. They would say human thought does not need to be educated. There is only the absolute, there is no human footsteps, therefore there is no need for educating, you are the Son of God. But here we make ourselves the Son of God on the fact of the first part, that fundamentally we are the sons of God. We make ourselves, in the second part, we make ourselves the sons of God. And these do not contradict each other. They are just the second part is just a translated sense of a scientific consciousness. She says here, the spiritual facts of being must be won step by step, that human freedom must be approached by degrees, that the human self must be evangelized. See, these are statements the absolutists will not accept. There is no evangelization of human thought. You are the Son of God. She shows the necessity to begin right in order to end right. She even says, mortals grasp the ultimate of spiritual perfection slowly. The very opposite of immediate demonstration is they grasp it slowly.